You're listening to a Speech Therapy PD podcast. Earn 0.1 ASHA CEUs for this episode by completing the accompanying course online at speechtherapypd.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Gestalt Get Together. We are recording this hosted by Speech Therapy PD. This episode, it qualifies for 0.1 CEUs, and we are getting to the end of the year. So if you're a speech therapist trying to get all your CEUs, I'm so glad that you're here. If you're listening to this on a platform later on, like Apple Music or Spotify, and you'd like to get that credit, make sure that you go to speechtherapypd.com after, and you can use my code Gestalt33 to get this episode for free and get the CEU for free. Before we get started with the Gestalt Get Together, I do want to say something important. I haven't said this before. I may be a speech-language pathologist, but I am not your speech-language pathologist. I'm offering ideas and information, but this is not medical or therapeutic advice. For that, I'd love for you to consult with the team you already have, or if you need help trying to build a team for your kid, please feel free to reach out so I can maybe help you connect with people in your area. But just remember, I'm not your therapist. This is not therapy advice. And also importantly, the things that I talk about, they do not apply to every kid and they do not apply every time. So it's not every. So keeping all that in mind. All right, so let's get into the episode. There has been a lot of buzz about this guest. People are really looking forward to this episode because of the topic, but also I think hearing from an educational consultant who is also the mom of a GLP is really compelling for people. Today, you're going to meet Christina Easton, an educational consultant and former educator who is raising a musical Gestalt language processor. Now, a lot of the GLPs in your life might be musical. Her son takes it to a new level. We're going to kind of combine interview and then information from articles about musical echolalia. Talk about her family's decisions about their therapeutic choices, her son's progress arc using music and melodic gestalts, as well as maybe touching on advocacy work. I think it'll be hard for the two of us to fit all of that in the hour, but we'll do our best. And now when it comes to CEUs, of course, there are going to be outcomes. Here's what I hope you come away with. The ability to discuss differences between spoken echolalia and musical echolalia. Number two, be able to outline at least three reasons why musical input or musical modeling might be more salient for autistic kids. And then finally, the ability to describe at least two musical techniques that caregivers can use when interacting with their GLP. So keep those in mind. And with that, I would love for you to meet Christina Easton.
Hi.
Welcome. All right, let's get right into it. Let's go back a couple years. How did this all start? And how did you end up getting to know these three letters, GLP?
Okay, so just some basic background. My son, that, you know, every parent who has to talk about their autistic kid has to go through these like data points. So my son was diagnosed at 21 months. He was first referred for a speech delay because at 10-ish months, we noticed he just was kind of regressing and plateauing in other ways. And then very quickly after that, this is also mid-pandemic. Very quickly after that, he was diagnosed virtually. That's like a crazy thing. Through like three different Zooms. And what was interesting about that time that will come back up later in our talk is both my husband and I were working full time in the pandemic with our first child with no, although I've worked with kids, my background is grades 6 through 12. I was very clear when I went into teaching, I wasn't going to work with kids who couldn't explain themselves and had too much snot. That was my, I was like, nope. Now I have massive regrets about that. But anyway, so we spent a lot of time trying to just keep him contained, safe, and entertained while we worked, right? And then we had all these providers coming in and talking to us all the time. And like some of them were on Zoom and some of them were in person. When I met you, he had been seeing one speech therapist basically since he had been two. and was making good progress. He'd been introduced to an AAC device. He was not yet in school, but he was in a full-time ABA clinic, which was like a very interesting situation with the communication stuff there too, right? And I went to your, like, you have like a little concert thing. And Ellis, well, I always knew he would love live music. At that point, he was already a singer, right? He has been singing before he even regressed. I have videos of him singing, like echoing me with Don't Worry, Be Happy and things like that, like when he's on the changing table, right? So he's always been musical. It's in his genes. But he got in that space and I'd never seen him sit and watch something. Never. And he laid on his belly and like watched other kids with drums and watched you. Didn't, I will never forget, you had that like gold dress on. That was very helpful. Watch those drums, like he was locked in. And I remember saying something to you like, I don't know what you do, but I want you to work with my kid. Like, there's a vibe. And you were like, I love him. And that was it, right? You started working with him, and what was different was the way, I've said this so many times to you and to people, he would walk into the space and look at you and be like, oh, it's the lady who speaks my language. Like, it was a face that he would make that I was like, I have never seen him, like, just look at somebody and be like, yeah, you, come on, we talk, right?
So when you say that, speaking the language, what do you mean by that?
You always approached him. Let me say this. As an educator, when I had a child, I was like, and a Virgo. Put that out there. I was going to do all the things right. You know, we had all the books. We were going to read every night. We were going to do all the things. This is a kid who, at every phase of his development, has humbled me to the point of just being like, I'm a failure. Before I'm like, oh, no, I'm not a failure. He's just different. Okay. Right? Every single phase, there is a moment for every phase of his development where I'm like, that's the moment where I hit rock bottom and like realized something's different, or yeah, I'm a failure. Right? And with you, I remember he would walk into the space and you could get joint attention from him in a way that like, I have not been able to read a story to him or play a game with him. Since the day he realized he could crawl out of my lap at bedtime.
Yeah.
Right? So it was just like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. I can now describe it this way. At the time, I didn't have this language. But you were just entering his world. So if he was walking around flicking stuff, oh, I remember, it was the floor, the wood floors. He would come into your space and just like study the wood grain. Yeah. And you would get on the floor and study the wood grain with him. While he was doing that, you were layering language about what he was looking at. You were singing to him about what he was looking at. If he was singing a melody, you were echoing it back to him. And then he would like look up and notice you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hello. Who is this? You're cool. You want to do this with me? Right? Mm-hmm. In a way that like, At the time, I thought people who would try and enter his space like that, he would just walk away from them because he didn't want them in his space. What I realized is that he just wasn't connecting because what are you offering me? Like, what is this? But when you got in there doing what he was doing, it made sense to him. And so he was willing to engage with you.
Yeah.
Not like, yeah. Like, versus rather than forcing, like, let me read you a book. Let's do this. Let's do that. None of that registered with him. But the music did. The absorption did. Mm-hmm. Matching him did. And that's the first thing that I was like, okay.
Yeah. So that actually points to kind of that third outcome of what is something practical that caregivers or therapists can do in the moment is that idea of joining in for a kid who might have limited or infrequent joint attention, especially what you're describing. And it's so funny because I look back on that period and I like kicking myself. I'm like, why did I pick a place with crazy flooring, all these patterns. Funny, because, and that's why I've had a bunch of families I've worked with, like, on the podcast this year, because it's really helpful to hear feedback about, like, what musical techniques work in these dyads. But also because it's really helpful. Before we got on the call, I asked a question. I said, looking back at how we've been implementing musical language therapy, like, what could I have done different or better to help you feel prepared for this? And one of the things that you mentioned is, in the beginning, what I was doing with that mirroring, I could have. Well, do you want to say?
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't until this past summer where I heard you explain it to someone else who I had working with him that I wanted you to, like, I was like, you show her what you do, right? And when you explained it to her, I was like, that's what you've been doing this whole time. That makes so much sense. And it changed the way that I was engaging with him.
Yeah.
Like, instead of me feeling like I was just kind of trying to reach him all the time, it was just like, oh, I know where he is. Let me go there.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And so that's feedback for me.
Being explicit. Yeah.
Yeah.
About, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. And then just keep doing what you're doing. Right?
Yeah. And to clarify what those things are, and this is what I just came back from ASHA, our national convention.
Oh, yeah. You're planning.
Some of the listeners might have attended, but I was speaking about using rhythm as that connector, as that place to meet, because one of the main strategies you already mentioned is the mirroring, but another thing to call that is entrainment. And entrainment is this, oh God, I love this phrase, biomusicological phenomenon. Tattoo that on me. It's this biomusicological phenomenon where organisms try to line up our internal rhythms with external rhythms.
I remember you explaining this to me at one point. Yes.
And so that entrainment, that on a larger scale is like, oh yeah, a dance troupe, or everyone singing together at like a religious service. Those are like, that's entrainment we can see, but entrainment can be so crazy small. Like me and him down at the floor, moving our fingers up and down on the wood grain. So entrainment can look really like unusual. It can look really small. But if the principle and the intention behind it is, I'm trying to match your rhythm so that we feel connected and in sync with each other.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the co-regulation has become a big buzzword, right?
Yeah.
But that's really what it is. It's not like, I'm going to make my voice big and small and make you feel better. I do that because that's where I'm trying to get you and I'm trying to match, right? But it might mean, like, for some of our kiddos, it means I need to, like, match your energy and then shift mine and watch you shift with me until we get to where we are, right? The second part of your question was that the GLP part specifically.
When I
first started working with you, we were also seeing another speech therapist who we had been seeing up until that point beforehand. And she was excellent and was the one who, like, introduced the AAC device to us. And we were at a point with his use of AAC where I was getting worried because she was really great at, she would see him both in our home and at his ADA center. Mm-hmm. She was really great at coming back to us and saying, here's what I'm seeing happening when he's at the center. And here's what I am telling them about how to support his use of the device. Here's what I'm seeing at home. And what I was noticing is that he was rejecting the device because he was associating it with work time.
Okay.
Right? And it wasn't the, like, goldfish cracker that you hear about concerned about in behavioral approaches to the use of AAC. But it was, every time they make me do something, I gotta use this thing.
Sure.
And so when I come home, I wanna play. I wanna relax. It's my safe zone. I don't want that thing, right? So when you started working with him, one of the first things you were doing was when you caught him liking a melody, and when you got a breakthrough with, like it was the, I like that. I like that. Because you were playing with the cars and you were singing it to him and he sang it back to you and you immediately were like, great, we're going to put I like that on the AAC. And I was like, for what? it's just this random, like, if you look at his Gestalts folder, it's got the most random stuff. Random, the subway, we don't ride the subway, but he likes it. It grabs him. It makes him feel connected. And that's when he started actually using the device to do more than ask for goldfish and stare at the vehicles page because he loved cars at the time. Right.
Yeah. I like cars. Yeah. Essentially.
Right. Right. So that was when I started to understand, like, this is not about using words. This is about using language.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, I think that was when I, as a non-speech therapy person, although I was a special ed teacher and had kids in speech, it was, you know, like kids getting pulled out to meet with the speech therapist who works at four different buildings to work on pragmatics. And I was like, but she missed math, right? Like, that was my understanding of speech, right? As she talks, it's fine. What about my kid with the stutter? What are you doing? Like, that's where I was. But that engagement was when I started to understand the difference between speech and language. And speech as a motor plan and language as concept, connection, emotion, expression, needs. And when I was able to do that, I was like, okay, I get it. That's why he's singing these songs all the time, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that is also, it's hitting me, that could have also been something I could have more clearly explained in the beginning too, the difference there. Because, like, with language, mm-hmm. we think about, that's like the symbology. What do all mm-hmm. of these things symbolize? And when it comes to the music, whether that's a whole song, a lyric, or even just a couple of notes, those are also symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about it, what is this lyric a symbol for? It might be full of different words, but as a whole, this is a symbol for something. So it can function,
right.
you know, as that unit. So, yeah, I love the way you explain
it. Well, and it's interesting that when you first asked me the question about, like, what could I have done differently, whatever, I don't know how you phrased it, but, like, it's after 8 o'clock. I start to sound flippant. Is it after 8? I don't even know what time it is. I first said to you, like, nothing. Like, you couldn't have done anything different because so much of this is about living it and watching mm-hmm. it and understanding it and experiencing it.
Yeah.
And yes, some of those explanations might have gotten me there sooner.
Yeah.
I still would have had to see how it was functioning mm-hmm. and how it was operating in our life for me to really understand it. So the other thing I might say is, you know, I hear parents talk because, you know, now I'm obsessed. I'm in, like, all the freaking Facebook groups. If it has the word autism in it, I'm probably in it, right? And so they're constantly, these people coming in being like, I need a new speech therapist. All she does is, like, play with my kid. And, like, it's not, we're not making any progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember feeling like, oh, this is what it looks like when somebody plays and makes progress.
Mm, interesting. Okay.
Right? Versus, like, here's a toy. What do you want to do with the toy? Where's the cow? What does a cow say? Like, you could do that all day. If it's not going to work because that's not how your kid is processing language,
mm-hmm.
it's funny. Like, people will be like, oh, speech therapy doesn't work. And it's like, no. It was the wrong approach. I think that gets me into, as I watched you work with him, I was also in the midst of my own, like, as all autistic, I don't like using the word, like, autism parent, but for the sake of ease, right? Like, so many parents of autistic kids go through their own arc of, like, self-discovery about their own brains.
Okay.
And I was at a point where I was realizing some of the things that I used to do when I was a kid that I used to get in trouble for. I tell this story a lot, that when we would go out to dinner as a family and my mom would be talking to me about something. My mom also speaks Spanish as her native language. So I've come to appreciate, as I've gotten older, that when she was speaking to me, she was also really concentrating much harder than she let on, right? Because mm-hmm. she was actually translating in her head. So she was being interrupted. And I just thought she was just, like, oversensitive and bossy and used to being the boss all the time. Actually, she was, like, processing a lot to talk to me, right? And so we'd be at a restaurant, she'd be talking, and I would look like I was listening to her, and all of a sudden I'd be like, I love this song. And it was literally like music in the background that nobody was listening to. But I was 100% locked in and like 82% locked into her, right? And now I have this kid literally just sings music and we just vibe on melodies back and forth all day long. And I'm like, thank God, but also, oh my God, genetics. Like, he is my brain on 7,000, right? Mm-hmm. And now let me make sure I'm not losing my train of thought. Right, so at the time, I was like thinking a lot about that and I was reading a lot about auditory processing.
Yeah.
Right? Because I also used to get in trouble because I would say, I got you, I got you. I actually only heard the second part of what you said and I would fill in. I still do that. I still get in trouble for that. Ask Mark, my husband. I still do it, right? And I remember reading something that was like, a lot of times people with auditory processing, when they hear speech, it's like somebody has a radio dial and they just keep messing with it and it's fuzzy and you're getting clips of words. And so one person saying a word versus another person saying a word versus another person saying a word always is going to sound different. Miss Rachel saying doggy and me saying doggy, I could say it just like her. Doesn't matter. It sounds different to him because there's all this fuzz and interference. The other thing, if you don't, you know, you guys don't know my kid, but like, anybody who meets him within like 10 minutes will be like, wow, he's got a lot of stuff happening in his head at once. You can see it in his body. It's just firing all the time. I'm like, this is when I'm like, I nerd out and I'm like, oh, the like pruning they say is supposed to happen that doesn't happen in utero. And like, his brain is not pruned. It's all the time, right? I'm not a neuroscientist. That's just my interpretation. But I'm rambling. I say all of this to say, I now understand why melody and rhythm work for him.
Yeah.
Melody carries this. If I say, you know, I'm stuck on this right now because he was falling asleep singing it. He recently discovered K-pop Demon Hunters. And I know, right? And this week, it is Just Can't Get Enough. Just Can't Get Enough from Soda Pop over and over and over and over and over. When he gets really tired, that's like where his mind goes. And that's like the loop versus the meaning, right? Yeah. Sometimes he gets tracked in a melody loop. But you can, and you can see the difference then when he's like thinking about something versus when he's just like, this is stuck in my head and it's meditative. He hears that the same way every time.
There.
Exactly. Right? Versus if I say, hey, can you just get enough? Hey, just can't get enough. Somebody says it with a different inflection, different pronunciation. He hears the melody and the rhythm the same every time. That's why it works for him.
There. So that's a perfect jump over to some of the neuro, right? So that's what I'm always thinking about is, What is underneath or inside of these acoustic signals that are helping or not helping as much? So when it comes to like regular speech modeling, there's so much variability in that. And so exactly like you said, I'm going to say giraffe, you say giraffe, everyone on this call or listening to this says giraffe, it's going to be slightly different. We're going to have slightly different frequencies and pitches that we're using. Our voice might lilt up, it might lilt down. Timbre's different, volume's different. For autistic brains, there is, there's this thing, it's like an overmapping of phonological information. And so neurotypical brains can kind of like split the difference between all the different versions of the speech sounds they hear. Whereas an autistic brain might map all of those little different versions, how I say, like, there might be too many to choose from. Again, is that a function of not enough pruning and efficiency, perhaps? And then you're also, I can imagine for us, he's also fighting against all the competition, all the sensory. Ooh, the way the sun is coming through that window, that's my intention. The strings on the drum, that needs sensory attention. So there's a lot of competition. What music does is it kind of cuts through the noise in a really effective way. The signal of it is so strong, and it is so mathematically organized and precise that it's easier to pay attention to. And music inherently lights up the reward parts of the brain, like, period. Unless it's, like, probably, like, horrible. But let's think about, like, a song that is extremely pleasing, which, of course, everything from K-pop Demon Hunters deserves a Grammy, but that's my bias.
Oh, my God.
It's so good.
Needs to be researched.
And that is how I announced my PhD in K-pop Demon Hunters.
Yes.
The mathematics, right? Those songs are engineered so well, as well as things like Cocomelon songs. Mm-hmm. There's engineering behind them that's based on mathematics and, like, how it taps into our emotional centers that really, really works. Music is, I'm sure so many people listening are sick of this, but music is math. It is the math of sound waves. And if you can arrange those in a way that makes sense emotionally and contextually, GLPs are going to say, thank you very much. That makes sense to me.
Yep. This just can't get enough thing he's doing is often coming up when he needs resolve. And it's that. And he never goes into that.
The really.
He just holds there and he starts again. Right.
And it's like key change too. The key change.
Oh, he loves key changes.
It creates that tension, right? And then the resolution. We've mentioned this before, those moments of build. But without it musically, it's so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. He's obsessed with the key change, for real. Yeah. If a song has a key change, that's what he's going to sing first. Promise you that.
So interesting. I'm not sure if anyone listening here live or afterwards is working with a GLP who also loves key change. I'd love to hear more about that. So kind of jumping off, because I want to make sure I get in one or two more ideas related to the neuro, because that's supporting the second outcome about the why. So other than that really clear signal that cuts through and the mathematics of how music is structured, there's something in the brain, and it's everywhere in the universe, but like the idea of oscillations, kind of like on-off patterns, there's movement of how signals are sent. So in all of our brains, there are oscillations related to processing syllables and processing phonemes. Syllable processing, we call that kind of like a theta oscillation. And then phonemes are gamma oscillations. And this is radically simplistic, and I'm sure a bunch of people would come for my neck over how I'm making this so simple. But what's really cool, so syllables are theta, phonemes are gamma, and there's a nesting effect where the gamma oscillations actually fit within the theta and they move together, just like phonemes fit within syllables. It is so cool how at the neuron level, we're seeing them fit together and move, just like sounds fit within syllables. So super cool. But in the autistic neurotype, they do not nest very well. So the phonemes and sounds don't quite fit within syllables. So that's another, I always say, because I hear so often, they're just stubborn. They're just this, they're just that. And I'm like, their neurons are not synchronized. It's down to the neuron, right? Mm-hmm. That is making it more difficult. And again, not all. Because for some autistic kids, their relationship with like sound to syllable is pristine, if not like elevated in advance. But when I think about kids like Ellis, processing the spoken language without the precise math, you can just see it's not quite lining up and syncing up.
That's such a good way to say that. It reminds me of something. We didn't talk about this before the session, but you're reminding me of a conversation we had. And I'm trying to remember what the words were that I was like. When he was first starting to develop his own motor plans for words, even if they didn't actually, like, for example, he loves this super simple song about, we ride the subway, rumble, rumble, rumble,
yeah,
rumble.
Yeah.
And he has decided rumble, rumble, rumble is waku, 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 waku. Like, to me, I'm like, how did you, I get the WR,
yeah,
but where did umble turn into aku? Mm-hmm. Like, they don't even sound the same to me. But now that he has gotten comfortable with that and he's rehearsed it,
yeah,
I remember there was a week that you came and I was like, hey, he's doing this thing where he's actually using the same sound over and over again every time. It's different. We were in a place where he was just using whatever sound was comfortable and it was all melody driven. And now he is settling into patterns, even if they're not correct approximations. That he's like, this is Rumble, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that exactly lines up with what you were just describing, but that's what it makes me think of in lived experience watching my kid. That it didn't fit until he was able to find something that did, and that and it doesn't make sense to anybody. But that's where it's living, and now we can shape that, right?
Yeah. Well, I think because that's when you brought that up of is there a name for this phenomenon? And there might be. It's hard to explain it, right? It's like when there's, it's so hard to put into words, but I'm wondering, could it be a combination of I'm processing these sounds differently and I'm figuring out how they all fit together. And then when I'm outputting my best attempt, then I've got this motor speech differences. So it's where I'm leaning is it's this confluence of different levels of challenge that then results in, okay, I think I nailed it based on his interpretation, he nailed it. And then that motor plan solidified.
Right. It's so cool. Oh,
it's really, really cool.
It's super cool. I know, I'll say this as a parent. It can be really hard when you have a child with high support needs. So you're already hypervigilant. You're already his everything, his translator, his advocate, his provide, all the things. And now you're also the only one who knows what he's trying to say because it's not intelligible to other people. Like when I send him out in the world, I can't be like, oh, when he sings, I got a Nico da Gali. That means he needs to go to the bathroom. Like, who knows that?
Yeah.
Right? But it's working for him. And now I'm starting to hear when he sings other potty songs, I know he's saying potty because he's saying Gali.
Yeah.
I know that I can now say, hey, if you hear him say Gali in any kind of way, shape, or form, that's potty. We weren't there for a really long time. And so I know that I'm a little bit of a weirdo because of my background as a special educator and because of just how my brain works and because of the way I like to think about things. I'm not always the a parent of an autistic child who is like, this is really hard. I enjoy nerding out on this. Mm-hmm. But I know that there are families out there who have GLP kids who are just like, how do we make him make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because you want your kid to be able to communicate their needs to somebody who doesn't listen to the same soundtrack all day long. I only know what he means because I know the songs because I'm in the house with him all the time. Yeah, last session, you were like, you're so good at that. I was like, I'm not good at this. This is the only person I spend time with. This is necessity. I've come to learn him, right? And so I think it's really important, and I think this maybe goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning. When you're working with a family of a GLP, you have to honor to a degree. I think you do a good job with this when you catch a melody that he's really into, whether it's one he's kind of made up or it's from a song, like when he was singing the Senorita song and you were like, okay, we'll talk about chicken nuggets because he likes those, right? And now he has a song for chicken nuggets when he wants them. Helping the family to find the patterns and shape it into something useful, even if it's not. And now he can say, I want chicken nuggets, right? That's been huge for our family because at least now he makes sense to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we also can see an arc where he can begin to make sense to the outside world. And I think a lot of families with kids who are not speaking or not reliably speaking, mm-hmm. the hardest thing is, but what happens when I'm not there to translate for him?
Yeah.
Right? And so helping us realize there are other pathways to meaning than words or pictures, which are very useful, but not always reliable. I think that's been really, really powerful.
Yeah.
I don't know if I just took us to another place that's not relevant, but I had to.
No, I feel like I have like one thought to respond to there, and then we can get to, I want to share some of like the anecdotes about how we did. And there's so many good ones, but what I'm thinking about, I'm like seeing it in my, I think in words, and it's horrible. I hate it. I see like the words flashing in front of my face. And what I'm seeing right now.
Oh, you're a living Wordle.
I haven't done my Wordle today. Thank you for reminding me. I'm always in a competition with my mom of who can get all green and get it first. So, but what I'm seeing in my mind's eye right now is this starting point of what I want for the GLPs I work with is I just need to get you some raw material first.
Whoa.
I know
what I need to say after this.
Okay. Hold on. I got to get you raw material. That raw material might be total nonsense and not functional to start with. Like, I think about his page, right? It's like, there's some goofy stuff on there. And I just came from a client right before.
Shake your hair.
Like, oh, yeah, right? But there's goofy stuff on there because that's what got their attention. That's where we have the joint attention. And that's what they echoed. I'm going to start there. Some of those words are not going to get us, like, there's not a big, like, runway with them. And then I kind of shift into this mode of, okay, now that joint attention has increased. This kid is like, okay, you say cool things sometimes that I want to echo. Then I'm going to be more strategic and I'll turn to you all the time. I'm like, okay, so right now this lyric works for this, but you know, long-term I'm thinking grammar down the way. So it's
right.
This balance, this packaging of, can the lyric we construct or model have words that match this moment semantically and emotionally, right? But also have some potential future grammar. Because to him right now.
I like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that has now become, I like this. I like cars. I like cake. I like whatever.
Yeah.
Right? But at the beginning, it was just.
Yeah. And it included, because I saw him, and I remember we all froze. It was such a cool moment. But he was looking at the cars. I saw the sparkle in his eyes. And I was just like, okay, how can I capture the feeling I see through sound? And it was, I like that with that, like, so I'm like, how can I capture the feeling of wonder in my voice? How can I, like, I'm not going to use minor. It wasn't like, I like that. I'm like for Halloween, but this melody that's in major. And I know he loves Halloween.
I'm laughing. Yeah. Halloween and Christmas songs all year long.
But it's like, let me get you the raw material that you actually care about, that's interesting to you, that you're going to remember. Then let's get a little more strategic, combining like the oomph, the special interest with potential future grammar, PFG, here for two, don't ask. And then we can really, really get into like the functional stuff, right? That's also a big word people talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But the function of it shifts over time. The function of the language right in the beginning is we're getting you going, having you feeling heard and seen and having that success. And then it can get that nitty gritty that like everybody can understand. And
it's so important to say families too.
Okay.
Let's give him an experience of feeling seen and heard and successful. Even if it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because families get really fixated on meaning and function.
Yeah.
Because of life and the world. Right?
But, right? All of life is symbols.
So I got all excited while you were talking about giving him all the content possible because it reminded me of the thing that we were talking about with building background knowledge.
Okay. Right? Good word. Yep.
So when I was a teacher, the first school I worked at was an expeditionary learning school. If you're not familiar with that, it's very project-based outdoor learning and has this whole philosophy I'm not going to get into today. But it also has protocols for instruction. And one of those protocols is building background knowledge. How it functions is like, when you're doing expeditionary learning as a traditional teacher, you would talk about like, oh, we're going to do our unit on the water cycle. In expeditionary learning, you're going to do an expedition and it's going to include a building background knowledge, expert texts, core texts. And at the end, yeah, you're going to know the water cycle, but you're also going to explore all this stuff to answer driving questions. So it's really cool because as a special educator in a high school, I had a lot of kids who by the time they were in my classroom, they hated learning because it was a lot of history of not success, right? And not being able to access information. My favorite thing to do was design building background knowledge protocols. Here's how that works. And I know you plopped a link. The idea, it was explained to me once where you want to put a bunch of Velcro on the wall and like throw out a bunch of stuff and see what sticks with the kid.
There.
And when you see what sticks, you can use that to drive through the rest of the content. Whether that's, oh, wow, a lot of this stuff stuck and all that stuff didn't. You are going to need that. Let's dig into those deficits. Or, oh, wow, this is the stuff you're really interested in. Let's make sure that as we go through this unit, we continue to build on these because it's motivating to you, right? That was such a great tool for me working with kids who were like, I'm not doing this, because it gave them autonomy. It was like the whole strewing thing where it's like, I'm not going to make you do something, but I'm going to give you a bunch of stuff and it's going to start really wide. And as we go through the unit, we're going to funnel down and then we're going to build back out. So I didn't go in and say, today we're going to study the water cycle. Here's how it works. Now let's talk about pollution. I would go in and for my, you know, struggling readers and like, now I can say probably language processing, all kinds of other stuff going on. I wasn't giving them the textbook or articles. I would give them a folder full of images, pictures, some articles, like news headlines, just anything thematic.
Yeah.
And another way of doing the background knowledge is you give somebody a mystery piece and you're like, wow, let's like look at this from all the angles. What might this be about? What do we already know about this stuff?
Yeah.
What questions do we have? What do we want to find out? And then we're going to use that through the whole unit to get to like, oh, okay, now we're going to go through the water cycle. And then what do we do with this information? Now we can talk about pollution and why it's important not to let trash get into storm drains and this and that. We can really apply it. That is where we are with Ellis now, where he has a library of super simple songs from all of his years in front of that TV. Right? And all of the songs that he hears in the car. And he's got this huge library. And then you were able to come in and give it a little bit of structure and be like, what's sticking? What do you like? Why? Okay, now that we know that, we can build on it and make it applicable skills. Right? And when I find that, I was like, oh, what this is. I've done this before with students. Like, this is a thing. And it works so well for a kid who is really hard to motivate. Like, you don't always know what his motivation is. Now we've learned a lot, but like, you know, he was very aversive because like anything that's too resistant, he's like, I'm not doing that. You know? Once he had the opportunity, like just today, right before bed, he was on his climber. And he was singing the Itsy Bitsy Spider. Do you know how many years I spent trying to do the Itsy Bitsy Spider? What up the water spout? I felt like the worst parent ever because I can't get my kid to sing Itsy Bitsy Spider with me. Now that he has seen it 100 million times in the Halloween videos in the cool minor key that makes him really excited, he's climbing his climber and singing Itsy Bitsy Spider and going upside down at the line for water spout.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, yeah. Okay, cool. Now, of course, as soon as I started singing, he looked at me and was like, shut up. And went silent.
And for people who might not catch the connection there, some people are really new to detective work, right?
Okay.
We have people at every podcast who are like, hey, I just found out about GLP. So can you very clearly explain the connection between what he did and that song?
Yes. So Okay. Now you put the pressure on because now I'm like,
I'm sorry.
Really? I'm going to try.
Just go that one next level of why that was so powerful for you.
Yes. So whereas he started with just a melody that he would just echo and sometimes super delayed.
Mm-hmm.
Like he would hear Itsy Bitsy Spider and then like 2 days later he'd be singing it and I'd be like, okay, cool. You know that song. But I didn't always connect it to what he was hearing 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Now we're at a place where he hears Itsy Bitsy Spider and he lights up because, oh, this one sounds different. If you don't know, Super Simple Songs every year in like freaking August starts playing Halloween versions of all of their regular songs. So the animation goes to Halloween theme. Oh, okay. All right. The animation goes to Halloween theme. The minor key happens for a musical kid. That's like, ooh, I haven't heard mm-hmm. like this before.
Tension. A lot of
the tension is there. Right, right. And he's like, yeah, give me more of that. Right? And then he found we were like the other thing is that during the Halloween season, we went on a lot of outings. There were spider decorations everywhere. They were fuzzy. It gave him a lot of sensory excitement. I started noticing him noticing spider decorations.
Yeah.
But he wasn't singing Itsy Bitsy Spider. But now he's got the whole picture together. This is a thing that climbs and goes up and down. And this is the melody that when he's going up and when he goes down, it's this part. And now I'm going to do that with my body on my climber. Right? So he's embodying the language part.
Yeah.
I feel like an imposter here because I am not an SLP, but this is how I have come to understand it.
No, you're crossing it. Yeah. But...
like he has embodied the meaning.
There.
He is applying the meaning. And the next part is going to be isolating it down to, is this a spider? Like, can you show me the spider in this picture? Oh, where is the spider going? It's going up. There have been so many games that you have played with him that mm-hmm. make him so excited, like the airplane game.
Oh, yeah.
That... his body feels good. And then all of a sudden, he's like, to get that feeling, I need to sing this melody. And when you sing this melody, you keep really emphasizing this up sound.
Yeah.
So now when he is really excited and wants me to pick him up and hug him, he walks up to me and goes, up.
Yeah.
Right? Because now it has meaning. But it took... that whole big experience, because he didn't used to sing and come up to me. He used to say, golly, golly, yuck, golly, yeah. golly, which was the whole song.
Yeah.
Right? Now he can just say, I want up. I want this part.
Yeah.
But that took the funneling and the rebuild and the building up. Right?
And so much of the musical modeling, it's either... for kids who are like playing small, doing like figurine play, a lot of the musical modeling I'm making about like the animals, like what I'm seeing, the object names. For kids who are in motion, I'm trying to match the language to what their body is feeling right there. Not you're gonna jump, not you jumped, but in that exact moment, what are the semantics of their body right now? And that, I just pulled up a paper. If you haven't heard of the term embodied cognition, this is something to learn about. You were saying like embodied, I forget exactly who said it, but that you were really speaking to it of, let me put that in the chat for everybody. And then for those of you listening later on, the paper is called Developing Embodied Cognition, Insights from Children's Concepts and Language Processing. It's this idea that sensory motor experience is critical for acquiring conceptual knowledge. It's what is my body experiencing through the senses and in my relationship to other objects, to height, to weight, to gravitas? How is my body experiencing the conceptual world? I think a lot of neurotypical kids, they start off with language about objects and things you can kind of like point to and hold. And there's a lot of GLPs who are like those single word geniuses, you know, they can like, they're like duck-billed platypus or like Atlantic white-sided dolphin. But when I think about kids like Ellis, I'm thinking about you're in motion. You learn best in motion. I want to musically model for you about what your body is feeling right now. So like going, going up. My voice is factually going up. Ooh, I call that a staircase melody. And I'm singing that at the same moment his body is experiencing upness. So that's what I talk about. I'll put ness at the end. So like, okay, what is his body experiencing right now? And like someone will be like, okay, it's like going down. I go, okay, how can we package downness right now? What can your voice do to match the meaning of what you want to say? So yeah, embodied cognition is something I recommend people look into.
Mm-hmm. That's a big one. It reminds me of how you taught him to use tired and how I've seen them fail. He came to the session, he was laying on your little cushion. You took a picture of him actually laying on the cushion. You put it in the device and you put,
I'm so tired.
And that's how we talked about him being tired for a long, 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 long time. Because that was one of the very early ones.
Yeah.
And last week, he sang that to another provider who was working with him in our house. He walked up the stairs. I was like, no, you got to come back downstairs. And he came downstairs and was like, fine. And hit I'm tired on his AAC that was just like, I'm tired. And I was like, I understood. He's like, I told you. I sang my song. Y'all were like talking about how I sing my song. I went upstairs. But I had to come back down here and tell you, I'm tired. Do you get it now? Like, but I'd never seen him use the plain emotions buttons before.
Yeah.
But he now can do that.
Yeah, he pulled it.
He pulled, yes. He's like, got it. I've matched it now. And that's what's been really cool to watch is he's now in a place where he's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, yes, I have this song and I have this melody and I have this picture that matches the song and I see that picture on this button and I see that picture on this screen and I see this picture on my visuals and I heard they're all the same together and they're going to get me the thing.
Yeah.
That has taken a lot of modeling and building and getting into his body to understand what is the feeling I'm having, what picture, sound, image, set, does it match? Where do I access it?
Yeah.
Right?
It's complicated. We take so much of this for granted. We take so much for granted how we can interpret, combine, express, modify all these symbols and really pull back and think about how can I match this arbitrary sequence of mouth movements and vibrations to, like, how can I match it? So much of it is arbitrary, except for, like, onomatopoeia.
Mm-hmm.
How can I match that? Like, literally, it is you are sending energy out of your vocal cords to someone to get them to it's wild what we do and take for granted. In my opinion, one of the most effective ways to do that, visuals for sure, and that emotion. Can you capture the feeling of what they're experiencing in what you sing and model? Because that's the whole thing. Like, that's what his body's experiencing. Let me layer on that meaning to what you're experiencing. Not what I see, not what already happened, not what's going to happen. What do I think you're thinking about and feeling? Here's a symbol for that.
I also think a huge piece of it, I had to go to my notes and be like, is there something I haven't talked about that I want to make sure I do?
Yeah.
And you had asked me before the session to think about like one of the superpowers that have been really powerful for him and also manageable for us as a family.
Great. Yes.
And that getting into his emotions piece has been a huge superpower. I felt a lot of pressure to make his AAC device, this super robust thing where he had access to all the stuff he needed. And once he started engaging with it, I was like, I gotta lean in. Look, I have a friend, Cass Griffin. And I don't know if anybody has heard her name before because she works with NWAX off on the West Coast and does a lot of AAC stuff with SLPs. She's like my mom idol because every time her kid is like, oh, I like this thing, she makes like a whole folder. And I tried to be her so hard, and I'm not. I'm just not. Y'all might be hearing me saying, oh, she's crushing it and she knows all this stuff. Mm-mm. There's a whole lot of stuff I cannot handle. And when I finally embraced, it is okay to like have little pictures all over the place and just use those. Now I can add a speech button with the song and it's just a quick clip. And maybe even though we have two iPads, they're never where I need them when I need them. Just put all the stuff, multimodal, anywhere, everywhere, as long as you're connecting it for him, he's going to make those connections and eventually put it all together. And it's happening. That's been so huge. And it started with understanding body and emotion and melody. Yeah. And then where can I put it? Where can I put it? Where can I put it? Right. And then that also leads me to like the affirmation. I joke with people all the time now that like I for a long time, I didn't worry about cussing in front of my kid because like it's not like a neurotypical kid. Like that's not something I worry about. I do now.
Yep.
I do now. But like, I also have to think about what kind of music I'm playing in the car. You know, all summer I was late, but I was into the Chapel Roan stuff, and we'd be driving to the pool, and I'm singing Casual. If anybody really knows that song, it's super inappropriate for a child. And then we'd get to the pool, and he'd be singing it. And my thing as his mom and his like communication partner is, when I hear you sing something that I recognize, I'm gonna affirm. I'm gonna let you know that I hear you. I'm also gonna model what it sounds like to me, right? So I'm catching myself getting super excited and singing very explicit music because I'm trying to affirm him, right? Like, it's funny, right? But it's just a different pathway to that same place that like other parents in their kids' language development are, right? And giving him that opportunity to connect and be heard has been huge. Huge. Whether it's, oh, I see you're really excited, so we're just going to make lots of excited noises. Or, oh, I hear you singing a melody, I'm going to sing it back to you with the lyrics. Whatever it's been.
Yeah.
That's been a huge breakthrough.
Yeah. The music has been the modality for him. It's been the vehicle that language, that speech can emerge from.
Mm-hmm. Last really funny association thing.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it used to just be he would hear a song and he would echo it. Now he's hearing a word and he's pulling from his library a song that has that word. So we were driving to school last fall and there was a storm in Florida. And because of some other song he had been singing, no, it's not even that. Let me be honest. I was mad that Taylor Swift had won the Grammy over Beyonce. And I, at the time, had never listened to a Taylor Swift album. So I decided, let me try and understand this. I've evolved to a very different place with both of those artists at this point, but whatever. I started listening to Taylor Swift in the car. And one day we're driving to school. I'm listening to NPR. They're talking about a hurricane in Florida. And this kid starts going, da-dee-da. And I realize he's singing Florida from the, whatever, her Dead Poet, Tragic King, whatever that album is, the one with the black and white cover.
Yeah.
He's hearing spoken language all the time. And he's now at a place where he's like, got it.
You can see it, yeah.
It's crazy.
And I can't control myself. I'm going to give one more example of that, and then we're going to wrap up. When your husband was talking about, you're like, oh, and then on Saturday we did something, and he goes, days of the week. Oops. I mean, incredible. He didn't hear days. He didn't hear week. He heard Saturday and will be able to pull out, yes, Saturday is a day of the week. It's amazing. So we are at time. I realize I didn't actually define musical echolalia. Speed run. The immediate or delayed repetition of a musical unit of meaning. It may be acquired from vocal, instrumental, or physical auditory input. It includes pitch contour, meaningful lyrics, melodic structure, distinct intervals, rhythmicity, syncopation, or compelling timbre. Delayed musical echolalia appears to be emotionally or semantically connected to the original context in which it was first heard or acquired. All right, so objective one, you got it last. Thank you.
Yeah, but we've talked about all that.
I just wanted to get the whole thing. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining. We got nice feedback.
It's always fun to talk to you.
I love this. I'd love to have you back so we can even talk about like deeper strategies and what we can do next. But thank you so much, everyone, for joining the Gestalt to get together.
You just started reading the chat. You guys are so nice.
People are giving some really nice feedback. It's true. Yeah. Guys, everyone, thank you so much. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our final episode of the year, where you'll be hearing from a speech therapist who realized that they are a GLP later in life and what that's been like for them and how it's transformed their practice. So I really appreciate everyone for coming. Thanks, Christina. And I'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Remember to visit speechtherapypd.com to earn 0.1 ASHA CEUs for this episode and to see our library of over 1,400 courses for all things SLP.